And then it becomes even harder to look away when you consider who's in the gap. Very poor individuals, many working as healthcare providers for people who have health insurance. A lot of our home health aides, a lot of folks in our developmental disability system, their wages are either very low or, more likely, they're working not enough hours to get them across that poverty threshold. We have 26,000 veterans in Ohio who fit in that coverage gap. They served, they just didn't serve at the right time to be qualified for VA benefits. And then, of course, there are folks who are not going back to work, people with mental illness and addiction and healthcare conditions, but the most vulnerable who you want to make sure have a source of coverage. And folks get care today. And this is the part where then, among some of our conservative colleagues, we have some of the most difficult time. We are paying for this. This is, the cost of this is shifting to other areas. Is there a way to, in a more smart way, get our hands around this? So some obvious thing here, but I want this slide to kind of loom up here as then I talk about some of the political considerations. Because we tried every angle on the political conversation. The money, the this, the that. We had an economic report that was very similar. The most compelling thing for individuals always comes back to this. Even our most conservative politicians don't want to walk away from this circumstance. So just quickly then, where we are as a political matter, I described a little bit the governor's willingness to consider this, but he was very frustrated. This all or nothing, it's all to 138, or nothing. But, you know, the exchange goes down to 100, so why not take Medicaid to 100? There was this real frustration among some states, I think, about why not something in between. And he called weekly to the White House. And wouldn't you know, 2 days before we introduced our budget in January, he got the call back from the White House. Valerie Jarrett called him. And I think what was different that time was he said, you know, look, he wasn't saying, I'm thinking about this, will you help me? He said, I have made my decision. I'm going to expand. I don't think I can get it through my legislature. I need your help. And the White House called back and said, okay, we'll look at this. We're thinking about some things that already exist in Medicaid. You can already do premium assistance. The problem is it has to be budget neutral. It's not. So what we will do is waive the notion of budget neutrality. And that path then is aligned with and was in tandem with what Arkansas really led the way to accomplish. So these things were in play to try to convince conservative legislatures to act. You know, our legislature considered it and then pulled it out of the budget. And our House eliminated the governor's proposal to expand. What is going on there? And, you know, as health policy folks, you really have to think about this. It has nothing to do with health policy. We consider the health policy argument won in Ohio. Even conservatives acknowledge it's kind of the right thing to do. The problem is districts have been drawn over the past decade into a version where there are clear winners. And it's true on both sides. You're going to have a Republican in this district, and you're going to have a Democrat in this district. There is not a competition in the middle among the Republican and the Democrat. The Democrat is being challenged by the more liberal Democrat, and the Republican is being challenged by the more conservative Republican. This was mentioned several times. That pushes things into territory where in any particular race, don't bother me with the policy because I have a viewpoint, and in our case, we have 15 legislators in that position who have the capability to shut down the House. The most kind of frightening statement, and you're exactly right, Trish, is states are starting to look like Congress. And this is why. Medicaid's just symptomatic of that. Now it's starting to move into education. Well, we don't want to have core anything. It's starting to move into other parts. So this does not move well. So that's where we are. What that means is, if you can't prevail with the policy argument, we have to consider the political argument. The stakeholders in Ohio have now initiated a process to put Medicaid expansion on our ballot, make it a matter of constitutional law. What that means is, if our legislature does not act, all of the money they would have collected in campaign contributions will not be available to them because it will be flowing into a ballot initiative. I think there is some concern that a dynamic like that occur, and there is some recent consideration of expanding Medicaid. Yesterday, the House in Ohio dropped a bill, which we see as very constructive to the process. The governor has said, by any means, get it done. We have not fiddled inside the legislature. This is their process to work through, but we are doing everything we can through that process to get it done. So, now my happy slide. We had a budget hole, we now have a balanced budget. We went from 89 cents to 1.4 billion in our rainy day fund without raising taxes. We didn't cut any benefits in Medicaid. Medicaid spending was 3% last year in Ohio. And in addition to holding it to that 3%, we had a budget variance of $590 million in 1 year. That means from where we budgeted, we came in almost $600 million below that. Because these experiments we tried, we didn't count savings because we didn't know if it would work. But it worked, so we get the benefit of the savings. And then that last point, there are still 1.5 million Ohioans uninsured. So that's why until the end, I think our governor is going to stay focused on that issue.
Yeah, I just wanted to raise a couple of points. There were a number of slides, I think, that showed not just the difference from one state to the other, but the difference in terms of different populations within a state. And I just want to underscore that, because neither Ohio, nor Utah, nor Pennsylvania are unusual about this. I mean, we treat children differently than the parents of those children, and we treat the adults who don't have children totally differently. And just to give a sort of a national overview, with respect to children, due to the confluence of Medicaid and CHIP, in virtually every state we're at least 200% of poverty. Some states are above that. New York's 400, New Jersey I think is 350. But every state is essentially at around 200% or slightly higher than that. For the parents of children, the median income eligibility standard among the 50 states is not 200% of poverty or even 100% of poverty, it's 63% of poverty. And so for a family of four, we're talking about incomes of less than $15,000 in terms of the median state. And as bad as that is, among non-parental adults, singles and childless couples in 43 states, we don't do anything. You can literally be penniless and you're ineligible for Medicaid. So this is really important, and I really appreciate, Greg, your comments about how important this is in terms of equity and fairness and so on. A second comment is that we are seeing a bigger discussion now about how the Medicaid program might be expanded. And Arkansas is the first step in that process. But it's not just that any state willy-nilly can say, well, we're going to put people into the exchange. There are some rules that are consistent with what we're trying to do generally with the Medicaid program. So it means that if a state is going to do a premium assistance type model, which can make sense because it will probably reduce churning, it still means that there are obligations to make sure that the benefit package is no less than what Medicaid would provide, and that out-of-pocket costs for a low-income population, that there's not a greater burden that is simply unaffordable. And I guess the last comment really flows from what Greg was saying at the end in terms of politics. I've heard this now in a number of states. I heard it in Pennsylvania, I heard it in Georgia, I heard it in a number of states, where people are saying that some of the difficulty in politics means that some of these decisions are actually going to take a while because a lot of Republican members, governors, or state legislators want to take a look at who their opposition is going to be in the primaries. And so that you know, if you can overcome any challenge with respect to the primaries, it might provide greater political flexibility to move to yes in terms of the expansion.
Shall we take that as a comment and move on for questions? I've got Tim, and then Mark, and then Alex.
Yeah, Tim Jost. Although the Medicaid expansion is the change in Medicaid that's most talked about, there's some other really important changes like moving to MAGI, the single streamlined application, the coordination of the exchanges, needy children, 133% of poverty into Medicaid. And I've heard much less about those. And I'm wondering, number one, are there states that are actively resisting that, that are saying, we are not going to interface with the exchanges? And secondly, are there states that are saying, we can't do it?
Well, I'll just say that we made that decision a few weeks ago when we got the compromise, the Secretary's notice that they, in Utah now, the individuals or families will go to the federal exchange, but only these small businesses looking for health insurance coverage will use our local exchange. But I've not heard any reluctance on the part of legislators to put barriers into that going to the federal exchange.
And the state Medicaid program will then interface with the federal
exchange. Yes, they'll link to the federal exchange.
And there's significant federal money to help build those IT systems that were very attractive to states with 90% option. So I think states are moving in that direction. I think the question of readiness is real, and whether they'll be up and ready, and we don't know what the exchange looks like for those states that are relying on the federally facilitated ones.
I think one of the challenges is when you have the political difficulties with your legislature, it can be difficult even for an administration to plan for it, even if they're still on the fence, because you have to put money into your budget or you have to dedicate staff to do that. So even if you were on the fence, your problem may be you may make the decision and it may take you another year and a half to be ready when you could have been spending the time being ready.
Yeah, and you know, the way it plays out in the state, federal reform has two very different personalities. You can hardly recognize them as the same thing. Where one, for the, you know, an entire year, a year ago, was very simple. I'm for it in its entirety as it is, or I'm against it in its entirety as it is. And it was that simple. And I think a lot of the folks who got elected saying I'm for it in totality or not at all, then later came to understand it's a very complicated piece of legislation. So for us, do we like some of the insurance market changes? No, our governor is opposed to them. Do we embrace some of the service delivery changes? Yes, absolutely. So at a kind of an implementation level, it's a lot more complicated. And in that big chart I put up of our plan, I would say about half of the activities on there in some way connect back to ACA, including, for example, implementation of MAGI. So it, you can't pull it apart, and you can't be afraid of it.
There also were some very helpful FAQs from HHS last week on the implementation. And they, it seems to me they've been very proactive.
Mark?
Mark Pauley from the Wharton School at Penn. I'm concerned about double counting and economic impact studies. So first, going to put my heart on my sleeve and say I am happy to clean my conscience by paying taxes to support Medicaid adoption in Pennsylvania. It's more efficient and less fattening than a big sale. Having said that, though, economic impact studies, so there's a positive benefit, of course, of an expansion of Medicaid in Pennsylvania, presumably is that the people who now are eligible will use more medical services. From the Oregon study, we know that's about a 30% bump. Unfortunately, the results there, I think, are terribly disappointing in terms of health outcomes, but I don't regard that as the last word. Nevertheless, there's a positive benefit both to the Medicaid beneficiaries and to those of us who care about them in terms of the improved health. The question is the enhanced employment that goes along with it. Is that really a benefit? And I guess the economics of this says, well, it depends on where those people who took those jobs, where do they come from?
Right.
The good news would be if they were formerly unemployed.
I will never say that it creates. I say it supports payment for jobs. It supports jobs.
I'm gonna ask you to tell me here, make me feel better. The not so good news would be if they formerly had other jobs, which they then were moved into healthcare, well, they stopped doing whatever else they were doing. We lost that. The intermediate news is if we hired them away from New Jersey,